All right. Hour two.
Woo! Maybe we should just treat it like hour one.
It feels like hour one. But
the whole rest of the show is going to feel so out of whack.
So, Sam, what happened at your barn last night? I'm just kidding. We'll get to that later on. We have to unpack that.
Yeah.
We've got to unpack that story.
Yeah. It involves a druggie, if anybody's wondering.
Just the idea of just a dude wandering out of the forest.
Do you want to do that now, and then we'll do top five?
No, let's do top five.
I know. That was Drew's way of telling me, John, shut up.
No, you were doing what I do, which was going off on a tangent.
I'm just saying, if people want to hear a story about a druggie stumbling out of the woods and talking to kids at our barn, you're going to want to listen.
Yeah, tune in after we finish up the top five, which let's jump into for a Friday right now.
Number one.
Top advisors to New York Governor Andrew Cuomo have influenced state health officials to remove data from a public report that showed coronavirus-related nursing home deaths in the state had exceeded numbers previously acknowledged by the administration. So they altered this report on coronavirus nursing home deaths.
Also known as lying.
Yeah, they lied.
They lied.
They lied about nursing home deaths.
Mm-hmm.
About actual people with families who died because of the way that they mishandled this.
Yep. Because they didn't want to disturb the narrative, which was Andrew Cuomo is such an amazing leader and he's handling this pandemic so well and he's an example for everybody else. And why can't Trump just be more like him?
I'm with you in the sentiment that you express often about that. Here's where it gets tripped up for me, and not what you're saying. But listen, you're right. A lot of people did that. And it was ridiculous. But they were also doing that under the misguided notion that what he was saying was true.
That he wasn't lying.
Yeah. What should have happened now in the wake of that, which hasn't, is that all those people that you properly shred should be the loudest chorus of individuals calling for this man to be removed from office. And if those people were, he would be by now. There should be a chorus loud enough. You want to talk about the mob getting involved in terms of the vocal mob? This is legitimate outrage material that should have prompted him to have voluntarily been like, I lied, I did a bunch of inappropriate stuff with women, I'm peacing out.
We said on this show how many times that if those allegations regarding Trump colluding with Russia in order to win the election, if they ended up being true, that we'd be the first ones calling for him to step down, resign, be impeached, whatever. He should be out of office. Where is the left? You know what the left is doing right now? They're saying, don't step down, Andrew Cuomo. How dare you? Don't even consider it. They don't want another Al Franken.
Yep.
They're saying it over and over and over. The lesson that they learned from Al Franken wasn't that, hey, let's stop electing scummy people who like to put their hands on women's butts unsolicited. No, that wasn't the lesson that they learned. The lesson that they learned was, don't you dare ever step down. Don't you dare resign. You fight this. You push back because those Republicans are so awful and so terrible that we're never going to give in to them. And that's what Andrew Cuomo's hearing. Don't be another Franken.
And what conservatives, I'm not even talking conservatives. I just mean anybody that ends up in the irrational target of the left to what you're saying. You need to do that, too. You need to not apologize at the drop of a hat when you've been accused of something. Don't apologize to a bunch of people that were not involved in whatever you've been accused of. If you did something wrong, apologize to the people who were directly involved in whatever happened there. But you don't need to be making a bunch of public apologies to a bunch of yahoos who don't care, but suddenly now feel like you need to apologize to them even though they were not affected by it at all.
The final report focused only on nursing home residents who died inside those facilities and did not include nursing home residents who were transferred to hospitals after they became sick.
They became sick in the nursing home.
They became sick in the nursing home and then were...
Because that's what Cuomo chose to do. He chose to send infected people to nursing homes instead of, I don't know, a big giant empty ship that the president gave to New York and parked on their harbor. They said, no, we won't use that because that might have to thank the president or say something nice about him, and we can't do that. So just keep shipping the sick to the nursing homes.
This means that the state's reported tally of almost 6,500 nursing home resident deaths was significantly lower than the actual nursing home death toll. State officials now place the nursing home and long-term care facility death toll in New York at more than 15,000 deaths. The number represents deaths since March 2020 of residents confirmed to have contracted the coronavirus or presumed to have contracted it. So it went from around 6,500 to more than 15,000 when they actually calculated these numbers correctly.
Political narratives and agendas have completely nuked all perspective in this country.
And they're killing people.
And they're literally killing people. And that's the point that I wanted to drive home. And let's bring it home. Right? Where are the comprehensive investigations over the number of our most vulnerable here in the state that would still be alive today if only Governor Tim Walz had acted swifter? I'm not talking about controversies like this. I mean, this in and of itself is a whole other level of evil, in my opinion. This is a whole other realm. I'm just talking locally, right? Let's get some perspective on it. They want to go and make hay out of what happened on January 6th, craft laws over this. Same thing with the death of George Floyd. Shouldn't have died, but we have wholesale, we have measures moving through Congress right now to defund law enforcement that had nothing to do with January, with George Floyd's death at all. And yet, there are hundreds of lives that were lost in the state because of Governor Tim Walz's inability to act fast enough and prepare for what happened with COVID, and it's nothing but crickets. We've lost all perspective in this country.
And let's not forget that the guidance from the Trump administration was to not send people to nursing homes when they had the coronavirus. Cuomo did it anyway. Walz did it anyway. Whitmer did it anyway. Who knows how many other governors did it anyway. They did not follow the guidance, and unnecessarily, people died.
Number two.
Personal income in Minnesota grew 3.7% last year thanks to government COVID-19 relief.
Oh, gee. You wonder why some people are less than eager to get out of this situation, that are more than happy to see it going on. Personal income grew.
It grew.
Because of government relief. That's insane and obscene.
That means that people are making way more money by not doing anything.
Ding, ding, ding.
Meanwhile, us suckers been coming to work every day.
What are we doing here?
What the hell are we doing? I feel like a fool.
I have no idea
what he's talking about. I would never have that sentiment.
I don't know what it is you're saying.
I just want to point that out.
To
be clear, that was not Sam. Well, it sounds like it.
Are you both winking at me?
And there's a story out of Reason about how Joe Biden wants 15 paid weeks leave for government employees, for federal workers. 15 what? Paid weeks off for federal workers who have kids that are out of school right now. It takes just a moment to understand so now we're gonna use federal money to pay federal workers to stay home with their kids
for 15 weeks.
For 15 weeks, which does two things. One, it balloons the government, and two, you have to hire more government employees to cover the individuals who are now taking 15 weeks paid leave. I mean, it's like so apparent what they're trying to accomplish here. It's gross.
Yeah, if you're a federal worker under Joe Biden, you could take off now and not come back to work until July.
Wow.
Paid.
It incentivizes people to have kids, too.
And keep them out of school.
Yeah. Why can these people not work from home?
Let's incentivize more uneducated children.
It's 2021. Brilliant. Are you telling me that these government workers have to be sitting in a cubicle to do what they're doing?
Or that their kids can't distance learn?
Yeah.
Come on.
He wants the government to just coddle. We will support your mediocre lifestyle. We will pay you. You don't have to think. You don't have to do anything. We will control every aspect of your life. You'll lose all your freedom and liberty. You won't be able to achieve anything further beyond where your station is in life. But for so many of you, you'll be cool because you can just be lazy sitting at home getting your federal checks.
The personal income did rise nearly 5.8% nationwide from the third quarter of 2019 to third quarter 2020. And Minnesota alone saw this increase of 3.7%. And the gains were caused by federal COVID-19 relief funds that were distributed last spring.
That's insane to me.
Yeah. Without unemployment benefits, stimulus checks, and other public aid, 27 states would have seen a decline in personal income.
Usually you see like a, when you get like a raise, like you know, like two, like you get like 5%, right? It's like, oh, yeah, I got 5%. That's cool, mm-hmm. right? You know, I mean, look at it, it's 3.7.
Yeah. Yeah.
3.7.
I've never gotten a raise over 3%. Like every raise I've ever gotten in my radio career has always been that 3% little
bump. I'm like, if you get 5, it's like, well, I got 5. Yeah. Like, yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Nobody gets a 5.
So everybody got a raise. So, governors got to shut down businesses, got to kick people out of work, and yet personal income, by and large, went up. It makes absolutely no sense. And it only went up because they took money from you, they took money from me, they took money from Sam.
What?
They did.
Yeah, they took your money.
They took your money, and they gave it to
you. They took your money hard.
Number 3.
The Minnesota Vikings practice field in Eagan is going to become a Johnson & Johnson vaccination site today.
Nice.
From the start.
Where are the Vikings going to practice?
Well, I don't
know. Do they not need to?
Right now. Well, they don't. They play like they don't practice. So.
I want to know how many people are catching COVID in line. I got sent. I'm not kidding. I got sent. The friend of mine sent me a photo last weekend of
in line for their vaccination.
Yeah. He sent me a photo of it was a vaccination site. I think it was near downtown, and it was the line was like wrapped around the block. It was like a blockbuster. They were waiting. People huddled up on the sidewalk waiting to get there. I'm like, how many? I know they're going in to get their vaccine, so it's kind of irrelevant. But still, I just, you know, you hear about these super spreader events, of which apparently all the Super Bowl parties, there's no evidence whatsoever that any Super Bowl event was any super spreader event. Right. But yes, good. Stick more people, please, so we can get out of this. And maybe Governor Tim Walz might consider perhaps maybe giving up his emergency powers.
Over 13,000 Minnesotans will take the field at Minnesota Vikings practice facility for this Johnson & Johnson single dose vaccine beginning today. The Vikings partnered with the state's COVID-19 community vaccination program to provide the massive indoor practice field at their 3-year-old headquarters just south of Interstate 494. Healthcare workers and adults of age 65 years of age or older are eligible to participate in the event that is part of the state's initial shipments of Johnson & Johnson single-dose shots, and the event is expected to last through Tuesday.
There was a, Drew, you commented on it. I had seen the tweet, and I laughed at your comment that Governor Tim Walz had put out of, we were ranked 5th when it came to vaccinations, and then he did this ridiculous tweet of, whoop, we're just gonna slide right past you there and be 3rd in the state. And you know, you appropriately commented on it, and
that's cute. You know, he did the little Minnesota, oh, just gonna slide past you here and move up to number 3. I'm like, cute, Governor, now drop the emergency powers. I mean, what the hell is it going to take? He's out there bragging about all the vaccinations. He's out there bragging about all the progress we've made. So why do you need the emergency powers?
Meanwhile, his tweet should have read, oh, sorry, took your freedom.
Yeah. Yeah, destroyed your business.
Oh. Yeah.
Put you out of work.
Oh.
That restaurant that you grew from the ground up, that you spent every single penny that you had saved on for decades.
Oops, sorry.
I just took it from you.
Sorry.
It's so insulting. I mean, it's infuriating. If you were anybody that's been negatively impacted because of his measures that didn't change any dynamic at all, and he's out there cracking jokes on Twitter. Oh, look at this! You know, just look at me taking credit. We're 3rd for vaccines, but I just—he's a joke. I just need to be quiet.
Number 4.
Most coronavirus deaths occurred in countries with high obesity levels.
Yeah, this is another aspect of this that, you know, if we had our public health organizations have lost so much credibility and so much trust over the past year, and it's because they're not telling us simple, basic things that we could do as a country or as an individual to mitigate the risk of coronavirus, such as stop being obese, lose some weight.
Yeah.
From the Washington Post, the vast majority of global coronavirus deaths occurred in nations with these high levels of obesity. The report by the World Obesity Federation found that 88% of deaths due to the COVID-19 virus in the first year of the pandemic were in countries where more than half of the population is classified as overweight, which it defines as having a BMI above 25. Obesity, generally defined as a BMI over 30, is associated with particularly severe outcomes.
I want a graph, like a legitimate graph. I want a graph to track when Because we were in the beginning of this, we were looking at the science, right? It was new. We didn't know what we were dealing with. We were going off of measures of how you would deal with a virus early on without knowing the full ramifications of what this was going to do to society. And we had graphs and we had charts and we were putting in different mitigation efforts, okay? I want to know at what point we just threw all that away. Because we did. We stopped. Like, it got, at some point, it got politicized to the point where we just stopped looking at any data. The left decided to try and own, and they have, this, we're following the science. When the reality was, no, you were gaslighting the country. You weren't following the science. If you were following the science, we would have been making adjustments all along the way in how we deal with this. Not dial adjustments like what Governor Tim Walz did. Not the ridiculous nonsense of just doing whatever he needed to do to continue to perpetuate his powers, because that's all that it was. Actual legitimate science and changing the way that we dealt with all of this. At some point last year, they were like, the hell with it. We're just going to use this for whatever political gain that we can actually use. We'll say, we'll call it science, but it really is just political science that we're dealing with right now.
Yep, and they saw an opportunity to sort of reimagine the way we interact with each other, to reimagine the way we function as a society. The science doesn't tell you that you have to be 6 feet away from everybody else at all times. It's if you're going to be in an enclosed space with somebody for like more than 15 minutes, then try to stay 6 feet away from them.
Right.
Not like when you're passing somebody in a grocery store, but that's what people believe now.
Right.
That's what people believe now because we've done a piss poor job of actually being honest and educating people of ways to mitigate risk during the coronavirus.
Number 5.
Minneapolis has spent more than $600,000 on barricades ahead of the Derek Chauvin trial.
Because of what, QAnon?
The
Boogaloo Boys. Yeah, okay.
Nope. Mm-hmm. From the Star Tribune.
Yeah, no wonder they can't afford to hire cops.
Umbrella.
They're spending it all on barricades.
It's all because of Umbrella Boogaloo Man.
Mm-hmm.
How many barricades can you buy with $600,000?
To drive downtown.
What does that look like?
Yeah.
Count.
Yeah. just dare to drive through Gotham.
You're right. I mean, they're all out there in the open. Right? You're right. I could just start counting.
Dare to drive through the Gotham of the North.
I will not. I refuse to go to Minneapolis.
I'd rather go to Gotham at this point in time.
Yeah.
I'd rather go hang out in Hell's Kitchen for crying out loud. There was yesterday, and again, I'm sort of referring back. It's like, you know, commentary. It's like, we need a new segment, Drew's Tweets. But you had
Drew's Tweets.
You had retweeted yesterday. It was Crime Watch Minneapolis again, and there was like this rash of carjackings,
yeah.
And the like law enforcement was like chasing these guys down, and we're just going through the city carjacking people.
Oh my god!
I mean, it's just it is it's the stuff of comic books.
Yeah,
but without the
violent carjacking,
but without, you know, it makes Heat look like a Disney film, for crying out loud.
$600,000. The bulk of the money, about $515,000, is being used to protect the city's 5 police precincts. Precincts. I guess that they learned their lesson last time. Another $130,000 is going to barricading City Hall and the new public service building, both of which are near the downtown courthouse where former officer Derek Chauvin will be tried.
And this is all, it has little to do with the actual trial anymore. That's
right.
It doesn't have. It never should have been this way. It never needed to be this way. It had little to do with it. Like, I'll grant you, people letting their voices be heard after the trial is over, based off of what the outcome is, and people who want to see it or would like to see it go a certain way and didn't go a certain way, and people going to the streets and peacefully protesting. But where we're at right now, and the coverage that we're going to bring you daily here on Justice and Drew next week, it never should have been this way. It's no longer, it has, I mean, what, 10% about the Chauvin trial at this point in time. It's really just a mechanism by which they're piggybacking all of their other tirades and stuff about. And it really is incredible. And it's a sad, sad commentary on society right now.
I found the tweet you were referencing here, and it was Crime Watch Minneapolis tweeted this. This was at 6:21 p.m. yesterday. So, like, you know, middle, right evening time, people getting off work. This is the time when, like, downtown Minneapolis should be booming. Right, should be in a normal world would be filled with people going out to eat or getting ready to go see a show or go to a game. No, Crime Watch Minneapolis tweets at 6:21 p.m. There have been several robberies, carjackings, and attempts across South Minneapolis in the last hour or so. Police think they are the same suspects now driving a freshly carjacked vehicle. And then a little bit after that, there was another Crime Watch tweet that I want to read. This was at, let me find the exact time, 7:25 p.m. 911. Caller's child found a firearm outside. Oh. Just found a gun laying around outside. This is Minneapolis now. This is Governor Walz. This is Keith Ellison. This is Mayor Fry. This is Mayor Hodges before him.
This is Philippe Cunningham. This is Fletcher. This is Bender. This is Jenkins.
This is your city.
Wow.
This is your city. People are afraid to go to your city. What are you going to do about it? 651-989-5855. Excellent job, Sam.
Thank you.
Since we brought it up and we have some people on hold, we'll get to your phone calls if you hang on. Biden does. He wants to give federal workers 15 weeks paid leave if their kids' schools stay closed. As for the rest of us, yeah, well, we're just out of luck. Bipartisanship these days, according to this Reason From article that we're about to share with you on Justice and Drew, Twin Cities News Talk AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. And legislative efforts around COVID-19 are no different. One exception, over the last year, both major political parties have shown a like-minded affinity for sneaking policy prescriptions into pandemic relief packages that have little or nothing to do with the pandemic. The most glaring example, in President Joe Biden's $1.9 trillion COVID-19 legislation, didn't Emory say that only 9% of that $1.9 trillion was actually COVID-related?
That is what he said.
Which is still like $5 billion or something, but still, even. So in this, right, in this COVID-19 legislation is arguably the $15 minimum wage, which seems to have met its demise at the hands of the Senate. But there's another subtle measure that has flown under the radar. It shouldn't. The bill gifts federal employees up to 15 weeks of paid leave if their lives have been impacted in various ways by COVID-19.
And whose hasn't? And whose hasn't? I mean, honestly, 15 weeks of paid leave for federal employees. Joining us now is Pat in Eden Prairie. Good morning, Pat. You're on with Justice and Drew.
Good morning, Drew. How are you today?
Doing wonderful. Good to hear from you.
I wanted to kind of elaborate on this because I am a federal employee, and I'll start out right away with saying I think this 15 weeks is kind of ridiculous based on the fact that my agency worked with our people who had children because they say that you're not supposed to be working at home when you have to be there to take care of children at the same time. But they worked with our employees to say that if you've got kids and you have to be kind of babysitting them during the day, you can work an alternative work schedule. So, like, if you're going to be home alone with your kids from, say, 9 to 3, and then your spouse comes home at, like, 3, you can work from 3 to whenever.
Yeah.
And can even work on Saturdays. So they worked with our employees so they could get their 40 hours in and do their job.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. I mean, if you're working from home, you know, why do you got to be married to a 9 to 5 schedule? Why can't it be, you know, 11 to 1 and then, you know, 4 to 7 or however it ends up working out?
And we already do have kind of some like alternative because we have some people who work 4 10-hour days. I personally do the 8 hours, 4 days a week. But I'll start it because I'm working at home. I'll sit down. I'm working at 6:30 in the morning at the latest.
In this, end this. And thank you for the call, Pat. We appreciate the insight, and I echo Drew's sentiment there. Some of the hall passes laid out in the bill, right, are relatively benign. For example, those experiencing symptoms of COVID-19 and seeking a medical diagnosis qualify. So if you got sore throat, I need to go get an anal swab, you know. So. Yet, that list gets longer and more convoluted. Most notably, it includes any federal worker with children in remote learning, even in areas where schools have reopened. Pat hit upon something, though. I don't care if it's federal workers or private. And this applies to so many different areas of the work aspect. You deal with these on a case-by-case basis. And most employers are going to go and adjust according to whatever situation that you're dealing with. You don't need to mandate anything, right? And this just opens up the door for just all types of fraud, individuals taking advantage of it. Truth be told, I feel so blessed with this job. And the one thing, one of the things that I've loved the most about working in radio, right, has been that we have, certain criteria that we have to meet. And we are on display of our job is out there every day. So, our boss man chat can just tune in and find out what kind of job we're doing.
Right. And then we archive it all on a website in case he missed anything.
Right.
He wants to go back to listen how bad a job we did.
And then we have, gauges that we go by, right, based off of, when it comes to people that want to sponsor the show, when it comes to how the show is doing in terms of ratings and things like this. What I've loved about it is, right, we've had just this luxury of, there isn't a clock to punch. We have to come in for a certain set time, but our show, we just do it throughout the day. And if you tabulate it, it usually works out to 8 hours plus, but really it kind of never ends. And I've loved that type of freedom.
Yes, I love the flexibility.
The flexibility is amazing.
Yeah, with the exception of the hours of 6 to 9 when we're actually on the air,
right.
We've got all the flexibility in the world when it comes to when we're going to sit down and do our prep, when we're going to sit down and work on bits for the show, when we're going to meet with clients. Clients and sales and things like that. Outside of the hours 6 to 9, we're pretty much free to set our own schedule.
Well, and I feel like, and this is kind of opening up the door to a whole other conversation with regard to this, though. And I wonder how much of this type of putting in these types of mandates of giving federal workers 15 paid leave with this has to do with it. But the work dynamics have changed drastically under COVID-19, and I think there are going to be a multitude of jobs that never would have functioned sort of the way that we function that are now going to function that way.
They should.
Salespeople who don't need to come to an office and can work from home. Look, you set your own hours. This is the criteria you got to meet. Mm-hmm. These are the goals that you got to reach, and if you don't, your job is going to be at risk, but we don't really give a rip about you punching a clock. Just make sure you get what you need to get done.
And whether you do these things at 11 in the morning or 11 at night isn't really relevant.
Right.
Right. It's just these are the things that need to get done and that you are responsible for.
And I can't help but think the federal government is concerned about this. Right. This is more personal freedom. And this is more, this takes away the ability that they have to argue a lot of points that they like to argue when they want to push for ideas that they tout are for the working person or the working poor.
But nothing the government ever does gives you more flexibility and more personal freedom. What they'll do is they'll discover inequities.
Right.
We've uncovered some inequities, and some people have a great deal of flexibility, and some people don't. So rather than expand the flexibility for the people that don't, they just clamp down to make sure everybody is at the lowest common denominator.
We'll dive into a few more points of this Reason article, of this ridiculous proposal to give federal workers 15 weeks of paid leave if their kids stay if their kids' schools stay closed. Plus, we got a list here, Drew.
I like lists.
5 broken promises and flip flops from Joe Biden's first month in office.
Twin Cities News Talk. AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Welcome back to your Friday edition of Justice and Drew. You can email the show, JD@TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com. You can also use the hashtag TCNT on Twitter. We monitor that throughout the day.
Reason.com is a fantastic website. They put together a piece talking about Joe Biden. You know, when we say we need another entity, because it's not Joe Biden. Like, it's not him.
Right.
Like, I need to, it needs to
the
be.
The office of the president?
Yeah, I don't know. The thing.
The thing that is currently
running the country right now.
Kind of.
Wants to give federal workers 15 weeks of paid leave if their kids' schools stay closed. The rest of us are out of luck. And so you get further into the article, and it says, one problem bears addressing. Millions of parents across the country are struggling with how to financially support their families while also assuming the role of teacher and Zoom technical support test proctor. The poor are bearing the brunt of that. Those working low-wage jobs who cannot tune in virtually from their dining room tables. In most cases, it's not federal employees who on average earn $110,000 a year.
What?
Federal employees who on average earn $110,000 a year.
And weren't furloughed. Over the course of the last year, weren't laid off, suffered, to the best of our knowledge, no ill financial effects from the pandemic and all the lockdowns. So why the hell are they getting 15 weeks of paid federal leave?
Well, what they point out in the recent article is it all comes with a dose of strategic politicking. Democrats have long fought for a paid sick leave program. As reported a year ago, the House's first coronavirus relief bill included the permanent paid leave package, including for victims of stalking and domestic abuse. The new provision has been watered down, massaged, and married to the pandemic, but they'd venture to say that that as a means to an end, at least to an extent. That's a 106% increase in the federal minimum wage was also marked as a direct COVID-19 relief is instructive. People hurt by the pandemic need higher wages, but the thinking fails to account for the millions of people protected to lose their jobs, projected to lose their jobs should that policy take shape, a policy that would obviously long outlive the pandemic. Oh, and there's also the $350 billion that Biden wants to give to the states hurt by pandemic woes, including those running a budget surplus.
Why? I mean, somebody tell me why.
Yeah.
Because we can. That's the answer.
Yeah.
Because we can, because we want to, because we want it, because they want this money, because they can use it better than you.
It was Laura Ingraham had said years ago, like, you know, the left doesn't believe that, like, real birth actually begins until you become a government employee. Like, that's like that was something she used to always talk about. And there's a level of truth to that. They want the government running everything. And again, this paid 15 weeks does is you give a bunch of federal workers time paid off. Like I said, they took it now. They wouldn't have to go back to work until July. But you're going to need to hire more federal workers to take care of those jobs that they were doing. So you're just growing the government even more on the backs of the taxpayers that don't work for the government.
Yep. And Mike in Minneapolis is calling in. And according to the call screener here, he's about to make a point that I was about to make. So I'll let you make it, Mike. Go ahead.
Yeah. You know, it's just so apparent that they're buying loyalty from federal employees for the Democratic Party. Lives in.
Yep.
And basically, it's the same thing that Jesus warned about. Beware of the Pharisees, the leaven of the Pharisees, who heap tons of stuff on the people and don't behave according to what they're heaping on the people.
Yeah, man.
If you want to cheat at whatever, like whether it's an election, whether it's, you know, at taking benefits that don't belong to you, it really helps to have people on the inside of the process, just your rank and file workers who are on board with it. And when you do crap like this, yeah, I think that's part of it. I think the left has done a much better job The left has done an amazing job of bloating government, hiring more and more and more people, lavishing them with benefits and taking care of them and giving them cushy jobs and job security more than anything else, knowing that they can never get fired. That has a ton of value. And then they say, well, look, you know, don't maybe, you know, when our friends come through here, maybe you slide the paperwork over to the side.
Yeah.
Just, you know, maybe don't look over here and don't look at that. And you're never going to get exposed or caught if the people that are involved in the processes are benefiting from it.
Look, the COVID-19 was never, ever, ever going to be able to benefit Republicans, right? I'm talking just from a standpoint of you know, if it's going to get politicized, there's no avoiding it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was never going to benefit Republicans. It doesn't. You have too many frightened people out there, and it's too easy to go and scare the public, and the media is too willing to go. You know, just the way the dynamics were set up, like it could have. And I don't want to say benefit, but we could have been in a position in the country with conservative leadership that would have been able to sort of push the idea of personal freedom and taking care of yourself. But this virus was such an unknown, you know, you were never going to get a chorus of voices like a Jesse Kelly.
Of course not.
Because a Jesse Kelly at the time, you know, even for, like we've talked about, for a person like me, and I think for to a certain extent to for Drew, was like, I don't know, man. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That just seems like we don't know what we're dealing with here. And we didn't
there was
know.
A lot of fear. A
lot of fear going on.
A lot
on.
Of fear and, you know, and a lot of uncertainty.
You got families and livelihoods. And,
you know, look, you take in the data that's made available to you and you make the best judgments available, you know, that you can based on that data. And the data that we were getting back then was pretty freaking scary.
Right.
You know, and I applaud people that were on it from the get-go and didn't fall into the fear. But, you know, speaking for myself, you know, I didn't want a virus coming here that had the potential to kill 3 million people.
Right.
And that's what we were looking at.
We saw
that's what we were told anyway.
Scary videos of people passing out on the streets in China, not knowing if that was related to any of
doors
this.
Doors being boarded up.
But it, you know, the thing of it was, and a lot of people woke up, and I think we all started to wake up, was when it started to get politicized, I think that told you all you really needed to know about the severity of the virus itself. Mm-hmm. Because there was a brief moment in time. Like, now in retrospect, we can see it. We asked the question often on the show, would the country ever be able to rally behind something like a 9/11 event? Would we ever all come together as one over a singular event and look past our political differences? In retrospect, a year later, for a brief moment, not in a positive way,
right,
but in a very sort of fearful way, the country did. We all kind of collectively went, apart from some voices out there, I don't want to overgeneralize here. There were some dissenting voices out there, like your Jesse Kelly's and some callers to the show, and hat tip to you. You guys were right. But there was a moment in time for several months, for a handful of months, where we were kind of all in this together. All right, let's get through this. And then it quickly became politicized, and that tells you everything you needed to know about the severity of the virus, because then everything split. And we began to see, okay, this is not as bad. Look at the science. Look at the data. But unfortunately, the damage was done, and the damage was always going to benefit the left. Because too many people were afraid, and the left was more than willing to go along with the idea of grabbing as much power and protecting everybody and making everybody feel safe. And that's what, again, back to this 15-week paid leave and buying the loyalty.
Yeah.
We'll protect you. We'll keep you safe. Don't you worry about it. You just have to do one thing. Keep voting for us.
Mm-hmm. Yep, more of us. And why wouldn't they? You know, once you get into that fold, why wouldn't they? Because more Democrats in office means more job security for you. More Democrats in, for the federal workers, I mean.
Right.
More Democrats in office means better benefits for you. These are all, you know, they are all tied in with public sector unions. They all get, the money gets funneled through all those unions. It's just like what we see happen with Education Minnesota here in Minnesota. They get tons of money from the government, and they use that money to help elect more Democrats. Rick in Maplewood, go ahead.
I just called to tell you about the 15 weeks off. My big question is, well, what about the military? They're the most important federal employees. Are they included in this? And my response is, if they're not, then it shouldn't happen.
Yeah, well, they're not, and it shouldn't happen. Thanks for your call, Rick.
By the way, just real quick, we can run through this here. As President Biden enters his second month in office, still hasn't done a joint address to Congress or held a press conference.
Nope.
43 days now.
Nope. Yep. So the invisible president.
Americans have now the opportunity to compare his rhetoric on the campaign trail with his actions in the Oval Office. So here are the five pre-inauguration promises or positions that Biden has seemingly abandoned since taking office. Incarcerating children at the southern border. They're doing that now.
Mm-hmm.
He said they weren't going to.
Mm-hmm.
But they're putting them in like shipping containers and mm-hmm. stuff.
Yep, yep. Yep,
that's awesome.
Yep, because, you know, kids in cages, bad. Kids right. in containers, fine.
So much better.
So it's great.
Well, it's easier to deport them that way. You just close the doors and put them on a flatbed. Right back.
Is that what they're doing?
Right back over the border. Right back over the border. Deportations. Throughout the election, 2020 election, Biden made his fair share of immigration policy promises, most notably regarding the deportation of illegal immigrants. However, since taking office, they have continued deporting thousands of individuals attempting to cross the border illegally.
What?
According to United We Dream. You can't do that. You can't. I mean, I know they did it in Inception, but that's fantasy.
It's made up.
You can't really do that.
You can't dream with somebody.
No. Be rad if you
could. I've tried.
Have you?
Yeah.
We've shared dreams. We're sharing a dream. We're sharing a dream right now.
Yes, I've always had a dream of working with Sam.
United.
You're welcome.
Wow. Wow. That hurts. I don't want to do my list anymore. United We Dream.
Can you blame him, John?
United We Dream is the largest youth-led, I'm just ignoring you, youth-led immigrant community in the country. As of February 16th, the Biden administration has conducted a total, you ready? 26,248 deportations.
Wait, what?
26,248.
Since?
February 16th.
Of 2021.
Yes.
Okay, that's a lot.
That's a lot of illegal aliens. Those 2,000.
I mean, we tried to tell you. We warned you.
We did tell you.
Yeah.
We didn't try to. We did tell you.
You're right. We warned you, but.
But the man was orange and bad.
Yeah.
My gosh, man.
Our efforts to shadow run things failed yet again.
What did he do? Beyond your feelings.
He tweeted mean things.
What did he do? Please. Please, hashtag TCNT, what did he do beyond your feelings?
Yeah, something you can quantify. Something you can really, like a tangible thing you can point to.
Bad, not good, bad. What did he do?
Yeah.
Do anything. He talked to the media a bunch. He didn't talk the way that you wanted him to talk.
He was giving press conferences every single day. Every single day.
You couldn't get him away from a microphone.
Never seen a president who made himself more available to a media that despised him than President Trump. Now you got a media that loves Joe Biden, and he won't give him any time of day.
No. He's like a vampire. He won't come out of his coffin when the sun's up.
Yeah. Trump's the nerdy girl with the glasses. In the high school romance movie, Joe Biden's the blonde cheerleader that won't give you the time of day, but everybody pined after. Eventually, you're going to realize you should have gone for the nerdy girl in the glasses.
The nerdy girl in the glasses was secretly hot.
Yeah, but all you got to do is take the glasses off.
And mid-wardrobe change and put the hair down. That's all that it took. I saw she's all that.
I try. It doesn't work for me. When I take my glasses off and let my hair down, there's no change in reaction.
You would need hair to do that, Drew.
Damn it.
Get a wig. You can buy a weave.
And just side note here, real quick, $2,000 checks they didn't do. The $15 minimum wage he hasn't done.
Nope.
And we also did Middle Eastern airstrikes. All these things is what.
Yeah, we're
said.
Doing a bunch of them.
A lot of middle. I mean, to the point where, like, Tim Kaine and Democrats want to take away his ability to drop bombs. Right? We told you.
Yeah, your 2,000 check that was going to go out the door immediately has been reduced to 1,400, and it's
maybe
not quite going out the door yet, and it might not at all, and you might not get one because less people are going to get stimulus checks than they did under the Trump administration because Democrats, that's what they do.
I want to make a point about She's All That.
Sure.
With Freddie Prinze Jr., right? Drew off
my favorite Freddie Prinze.
Well, he did do the voice of Kanan in Rebels, which was pretty awesome. But, so you make a point off when we talk, because I love Ready Player One, the movie, and the first book, second book, not so much. But in the movie, I'm with you 100%, right? Olivia Cooke, you know, she's got this wine stain on her eye, and in the film, like, they try to play it off, like, oh, don't look at me.
Yeah, I'm so hideous.
I'm so hideous. Oh, gosh, don't look at me.
You're going to hate me. Like, no, you're beautiful.
You're beautiful.
You have a slight discoloration under your cheek. You're no less beautiful because of a slight discoloration under your cheek.
She could have it on half her face and she would still be beautiful.
In the book, she was like, she was truly an ugly person.
It truly sort of jacked her up. But in the film, it's just like, oh, you don't have to lie. But
he loved her anyway because he loved her for who she was.
I'm going to cover it with my hair. And She's All That, which was the, you know, which is the nerdy girl one. It's like, no. They did not do a good job.
Yeah,
she was always pretty in that movie.
Of course she was.
It was not a true.
Not a transformation.
No, it was not a transformation.
It was just taking off the glasses and letting the hair down.
Any more than the Taylor Swift video was. Was it You Belong to Me? Is it that one?
Oh, yeah,
she's sitting
at
home.
Like in one, she's got like her hair. It's like just the blonde hair.
And the glasses. Kind of like, yeah, and she's glasses. A nerdy girl. Taylor Swift, you're never the nerdy girl.
And then like the not nerdy girl had like really sleek brunette hair and wore skirts.
Yeah, whatever.
And
whatever,
no
Taylor. You're dumb on politics, but you were never the unattractive nerdy girl. Sorry. This doesn't work. All right. Speaking of nerdy girls, we are finally going to get to the story of what happened.
Wait a second. You just call me a nerdy girl because I will steal your lunch money.
Look, if you take off the glasses and let your hair down,
seriously,
you might be cute.
I don't even have glasses on.
I know. Well, maybe you should put some on. It's real difficult in here. There's a way to tint out that glass. We're gonna find out what happened on it. You don't want to miss the story because we haven't gotten all the details. We got a preview early.
Yeah, we didn't get all the way to the end.
This involves a group of kids at night, strangers walking out of the forest. Offering up plethoras of drugs.
To children.
We'll give you the details next. Don't go.